Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Pass time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right, needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5, touchdown Giants, 97 yards.
Now here's your host, John Schmell.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. Also on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. Today we start our tour around the NFC East. Not a whole lot of news going on with the Giants. OTAs don't start until next week. So I figure it will be a good time to talk to one writer that covers each of the three NFC East teams. We're going to talk to Mickey Spagnuolo from DallasCowboys.com today, Dave Spadaro from Eagles.com tomorrow, and then we're going to get somebody on from the Redskins on Friday. So let's start off with the Dallas Cowboys, and we're joined by Mickey Spagnuolo from DallasCowboys.com. Mickey, good morning. How's everything down in Big D?
Just fine. How are you doing today, John?
Everything's good, Mick. Let's start with the draft first. I know there was a lot of bad post-draft grades for the Cowboys, which, as we know, mean nothing because you don't know anything about a draft until 3 or 4 years after it actually takes place. But have people settled down a little bit, and what is the overall picture on how the Cowboys did and what they did on the draft, trading down in the first round, getting Travis Frederick, and then picking up a couple of skill position guys later on?
Yeah, I think things have somewhat simmered down to the point of, well, let's see what happens. Obviously, the Cowboys went into the draft hoping to fortify that offensive line. And, you know, I don't think they even dreamed that those top six offensive linemen would be drafted in the first 11 picks. And, you know, maybe they got a little stubborn or maybe they were persistent. But it was almost like, by golly, we're going to get an offensive lineman with our first pick. And so thus the trade down to take Travis Frederick, who has position flex. I think that gives him a little more value that he could play center. And if Phil Costa's ready to go and can win the center spot, then he can play guard. I think either one of the two spots he'll be starting in the, on day one. And then because of their trouble trading down, they pick up an extra pick and they get Terrence Williams. So you could say, you know, they wouldn't have had either Terrence Williams or J.J. Wilcox, the safety from Georgia Southern, had they not traded down. They would have just had one thing. And the interesting thing I noticed is if you didn't get Frederick, who was considered, I believe, the best center in the draft, there was only one other lineman taken in the second round. So to me, that indicated that there wasn't a lot of surplus offensive linemen after those first six or seven guys went. So I think if you look at it a little realistically instead of overreacting, because I think everybody's been conditioned to think that the Cowboys don't do anything right in the draft, then I think that, yeah you got to kind of let this one play out and just see how the Frederick / Williams pick plays out before judging exactly what they did with the trade down.
One more quickie on the draft before we hit the rest of the team. Mickey, if the Cowboys could get in a time machine and go back, would they take Pugh with that 18th pick, or would they rather have Frederick where they got him and then have either Wilcox or Williams in that third round with the additional pick they got from San Francisco?
Yeah, I don't know how high they were on Pugh. You know, he's a guy that didn't have any position flex. You had just spent a first-round pick on a tackle 2 years ago, and I think that their idea was we need to fortify the middle of this offensive line. And you know, I don't know if they were not anticipating Pugh, you know, not being there when they picked with the 31st pick, because I think two of the guys that they certainly would have considered came off the board in the next two picks with, I believe it was Pugh and Reed, right?
Yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah, so, you know, I don't know if they were counting on those guys falling. You know, the thing that I think, and I see the Cowboys get accused of this, that they reached and they took a guy in the first round with a second-round pick. Well, okay, it was the 31st pick. He was two picks away from the second round. I would challenge anybody to tell me that the last 12 picks, at least, in the first round, they probably all had second-round grades, because when we went into this draft, everybody was talking about, well, it's a 15 to 18 player first-round pick. So there was a lot of teams that ended up taking guys that had second-round grades in the first round.
All right, well, what's going to happen on this offensive line, Mickey? Is Frederick going to be the starter at center? And if he is, who's going to slide in at guard? They seem to have three or four different guys there, considering a couple younger guys like the Leary kid. Will Costa move from center? They still have Livings and Bernardo from last year. And then what's going to happen at right tackle? There seems to be a lot of moving parts. This is going to be a pretty big offseason to see who wins those spots on the offensive line, isn't it?
Yeah, offseason and I would say training camp. I would think that Phil Costa is not just going to roll over and say, Travis Frederick, here's the starting center job. If he can stay healthy and compete at the level he did last summer and in the three games that he was able to play before suffering the injury, I think he's got a good chance of holding that job. And to me, the best thing that could happen is if he's the starting center and Frederick's the starting guard. Because to me, the guard positions were the Cowboys' biggest problems. And I know they had problems at safety, I mean at right tackle. Doug Free did not play well early in the season. And no matter how well he played at the end of the season, no one remembered that. They only remembered what happened in those first half the season, 10 games. So to me, if you can get a twofer, meaning Costa at center, and then Frederick at the guard position, I think that helps solidify the middle. And you mentioned a guy that's kind of high on my list, Ron Leary, who they signed as a rookie free agent last year and gave some guaranteed money to because they thought so much of him. He played a whole lot in training camp because of the injuries. And then when it got closer to the start of the season, it was like the complexity of the offense, I think, kind of overwhelmed him a little bit, and he just kind of wasn't ready for it. So I want to see what he's able to do this offseason during these workouts and when we get to training camp, because I think he's kind of the guy that can, I think, turn some heads. I talked to some of the defensive guys last year, and they told me from a physical standpoint and what he's able to do, that this guy's a player. The problem was he just didn't grasp the offense as fast as they were hoping for. I would have no problems if they ended up with two new guys at guard and Costa back at center. As for Doug Free, you know, they've been in negotiations to lessen the base salary. I think at some point that's going to happen. The Cowboys want Doug Free back. They just don't want him back at $7 million base salary. And I think they're going to be patient with this, John, because as Jerry Jones said during the rookie minicamp this past weekend, that they're not drawing a line in the sand on this and say, okay, you either take it or leave it. You either take the pay cut or we're cutting you. I don't think they want to go there.
All right, and if the Cowboys' line can give Tony Romo some time, he has a couple more weapons, will the Cowboys be able to integrate Escobar as a second tight end and actually, you know, get some catches and be effective? They haven't been able to do that in the past with Martellus Bennett, Anthony Fasano, and can they mix Terrence Williams in here at the same time if Miles Austin stays healthy?
Well, that's the game plan. The game plan is to try to make sure that Escobar is part of a 12-personnel package where they play a lot of two tight ends. They feel like he's got the ability to take some pressure off of Jason Witten. Now, again, he's a rookie, and he's got to learn. He's got to be able to, you know, integrate himself into the offense. But the idea is to do that and get some production out of it. Now, he's not the blocker, and he's certainly not the blocker that Martellus Bennett was for the Cowboys when they went two tight ends. But I think he's got some pretty good hands just watching him in the rookie mini camp, and I think they look at him as a valuable receiver. And if you're using two tight ends, maybe you can't just automatically say, okay, we're taking Witten out and we'll take our chances with the other guy. The other guy's got to make teams and defenses pay for that. As for Terrence Williams, you know, initially, maybe the third receiver, the guy that comes in when they go three wide, because the one thing the Cowboys like to do, and I know the Giants certainly understand this, is when the Cowboys go three wide, they like moving Miles Austin in the slot and then putting the third receiver outside. Well, now, instead of putting one of those munchkins outside, you got a guy that's 6'2", you know, 220 pounds that runs pretty well and can play the outside, and you can't just say, oh, well, we'll just, you know, just worry about Austin and Bryant and take our chances with the third guy. If Terrence Williams can develop soon enough and understand the offense quickly enough, I think they've got another threat on the outside.
I realize they had a lot of injuries last year, but the Cowboys' defense was a problem for a lot of last year, Mickey. They haven't made a lot of personnel changes, but they have made a change of defensive coordinator. I guess the team thinks this personnel group can play that Monty Kiffin cover two scheme. They didn't have to add anybody. And is the thought around Valley Ranch that change in scheme is going to be enough to turn around that defense?
Well, they got to stay healthy, number one. And you mentioned the injuries. And, you know, they had suffered so many injuries, it seemed like they were getting injuries to the replacement guys that were coming in for the injured guys. And it just kind of snowballed as the season went along. Yeah, you got to stay healthy, and I think that was the number one problem on defense. I think the second problem was, I don't know if it was much as the scheme as who was running the scheme. I think at times with Rob Ryan as the defensive coordinator, they tried to get too exotic. They tried to do too many things, and it was almost like they fooled themselves because they tried to do so much and they ended up not doing anything. And so I think simplifying the defense, maybe simplifying the packages. Rob was a big believer of getting as many guys into the game and on the field as possible. And I think at times it was just too much. And so I think with Monty Kiffin and Rod Marinelli here, putting an emphasis on pass rush, getting the core back, getting penetration up front with the front four will be a little different. Now, again, having said that, the key to the whole deal is you're going to have two 260-pound, maybe, defensive ends out there with their hand on the ground, you know, every play, DeMarcus Ware and Anthony Spencer. And those guys aren't used to doing that. Now, they did it in college, but this is in college. So the key to me is those two guys have to be able to withstand the physical punishment that they're going to take to be able to successfully play the 4-3. And, again, it's not all about pass rush, because if you can't stop the run, then no one's even going to bother to throw against you. And so I think that's going to be a big key for those two guys to be able to put their hand on the ground and hold up in the running game.
Yeah, there's really no question. The Cowboys have talent on the defensive line, but they do have some age. And do you wonder whether or not Jay Ratliff can stay healthy even in this new scheme for a 16-game season? Is Jason Hatcher and him enough at defensive tackle? Do they have enough behind those guys if injuries once again hit that position?
Yeah, I think they're probably one player short, which you know, takes us back to where we started with the argument on the draft. You know, should you have taken Sharif Floyd, who was sitting there for you at 18? The common theory was, at least from the front office, was that they didn't want to use a first-round pick on a guy that's a two-down player, meaning a one-technique defensive tackle who probably wasn't going to be on the field on third down. But having said that, without, you know, you assume Hatcher and Ratliff are healthy, but then what? You know, can Sean Lissamore give you something? I think the X factor in this whole thing is Tyrone Crawford, their third-round pick from last year. He's kind of an either-or guy. He can play defensive end. They think he can play inside. He did pretty well the end of last year. I think that if he can come through, I think it lessens the burden of you know, just exactly what they have up front. But you're right. There's not a lot of depth behind Hatcher and Ratliff. And I'm not sure Hatcher is a three-down player either. I'm not sure he's a guy that's going to go in there at the one technique and hold up against the run for, you know, 40 plays a game. So it's going to be very interesting to see just how they work it in the middle there. And we'll get our first glimpse of it next week when they start their OTA practice of just where they're lining everybody up.
And obviously sometimes the weakness of that cover two can be the middle of the field. And I think most people believe Sean Lee and Bruce Carter are the perfect linebackers to handle their side of it. But where are the Cowboys right now at the safety position? Do they believe they have the guys in-house that can have some safeties that can protect the middle of the field, play that cover two, prevent guys from going over the top, and lay some hits on some guys going over the middle?
Well, that's going to be maybe the biggest question going into training camp, because they really don't know. They think they know. They think they have candidates. Barry Church coming back after another guy that only played three games last year after looking really playing really well in the offseason and in training camp and winning the starting job, and then tears his Achilles. Now, can you assume a guy that tears his Achilles comes back just the way he was? Well, that's got to be answered. So, you know, I think that with him coming back, you feel a little bit better about the safety position. They drafted J.J. Wilcox, but he's only got 1 year of experience playing the safety position at Georgia Southern. He was a running back, but he looks like a guy that can, you know, help him out back there and be able to cover some ground. So when they get to training camp, you know, it's going to be a type of deal where it's going to be some open competition at the safety spot and for both safeties too, not just one, but both safeties. You know, that position's going to be up in the air. So they've got some work to do there. They've got to be able to figure some things out, and they'll see just how these guys perform during training camp. And then there's one more safety, and it just skipped my mind on.
Well, you got Johnson. You got Johnson, Wilcox, Barry Church.
Yeah, Matt Johnson.
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to remember. Matt Johnson, who they thought highly of. They thought enough of him to use for a fourth round pick. He was never healthy.
Right.
So we'll see if he's one of those guys that's just not healthy ever, or if this guy can play. They feel like he can run, so that'll be an interesting guy to keep an eye on.
A couple more quickies from Mickey Spagnuolo from DallasCowboys.com. Last year, Mickey, the Cowboys invested a lot of money in two guys they think should be shutdown corners. Now, Monty Kiffin uses his corners a little bit different in his system. You have to tackle. You have to run support. Maybe not quite as much man-to-man bump and run, though I think he uses them more than some people might think. Will those corners be able to adjust to this new system and be as effective as they were playing that bump and run man-to-man?
You know, that's the least of their worries. I think those guys are quality players. They probably can play in any system you want them to play in. They needed to tackle better last year when they were in a 3-4. I thought that was one of the weaknesses of Morris Claiborne's game, that he wasn't physical enough on the outside, that he kind of got tossed around in the running game. So regardless if they were playing 3-4 or 4-3, he needed to improve and tackle better. So I think that they'll be okay. Sure, the cornerback's got to tackle, but all cornerbacks need to tackle. You can't just be sitting there playing fancy bump and run and never worry about the running game. So
unless you're Deion Sanders,
I wouldn't be as worried about that one as I would about the safety position and who's going to be, at least on the defensive side of the ball, the safety position, and who's going to be that other full-time inside defensive tackle.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask one question about Tony Romo. And there's based on what Jerry Jones has said, he's having a lot more input in game planning and, you know, being in the building more to work with the coaches. Is more of this being made than it should be, Mickey, or is this a legitimate big-time change in what we've seen in the past?
Yeah, I think it's probably been over-exaggerated a little bit. I don't know how Tony Romo can spend more time in the building than he already has. Now, will they allow him to have a little bit more input in the game planning at the beginning of the week? I think that's kind of the idea. to start picking his brain. Because as you know, John, what normally happens is the team puts in a game plan. You go to practice. You get your work in Wednesday and Thursday.
Yep.
And then after Thursday's practice, they'll go to the quarterback and go, okay, what'd you like? What you didn't like? What do you think works best? And then they adjust the game plan for Friday's practice, and then you go forward. Well, I think the thinking here is, well, instead of waiting to Thursday, let's talk to the quarterback early in the week and see what he thinks. Let's see if, you know, what his ideas might be. So might that cause Tony Romo to look at the next opponent a little sooner than normal? Yeah, probably. But I don't know that, you know, he's going to be scripting all the plays and telling the offensive coordinator, by the way, which is another thing that no one's ever mentioned, who's going to end up calling the plays for sure.
Who is calling the plays, Mickey? Tell us.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I might be calling the plays. Who knows the way things have been going so well. And I'm not sure if they actually know, if they're just trying to feel their way through this. And you know how perception goes. There's this idea that if you just change who's calling the plays, that's going to solve everything. Right? That's going to cause you to run for more than 1,265 yards they did last year, which was a franchise 16-game low. The offensive line better perform better, and then the play caller will be much better. You know, I'm fairly amused, and I think Bill Callahan probably is a guy that can do a decent job calling plays, but I remember, you know, when he called plays, he came under fire when he was at Oakland. So, yeah, it's a great thing to cover the Cowboys because there's always some sort of something to talk about and to debate.
Yeah, you know, and the thing about the play calling, to me, it almost, rather than helping the offense, I think if you move the play calling duties off of Jason Garrett, I think it almost during the game gives him an opportunity to pay a little bit more attention to the other stuff like clock management. You might avoid some of the late game issues they've had. I'm trying to remember who it was here, but they talked a lot about how, you know, when a coach is worried about calling the next play, it's hard to manage your timeouts, manage the clock, and I think it might take a little bit of the heat off of him at the end of games if he doesn't have to worry about calling every offensive play. That's why a little help from an offensive coordinator might be beneficial to him in the long term.
Or it doesn't put pressure on somebody else who's supposed to be helping him with those clock management duties, right?
That's true, too.
You can rely on that on yourself and be more self-sufficient. You know, I had very little problems with the play calling. I think Jason Garrett was doing a pretty good job with the offense, managing what he had to try to mask up front. With the inability of that offensive line and all the injuries they had gone through. So it'll be interesting to see this offseason and during training camp and preseason if this offensive line can actually play together, all five guys, for at least one quarter, because they never had that opportunity last year with the injuries, first to Bernardo, then Livings, then Costa. You know, Tyron Smith missed a little time. So they never really got all five guys together. And all of a sudden, here you are, you know, a couple days before the first week of the season, and you're having to go and make a trade to bring in a guy that can play center for you, Ryan Cook, who didn't practice with anybody until the first week of the season. And as you know, I think people understand football, know that's very hard to put an offensive line together on the fly. It has a lot to do with coordination. So we'll see if the guards come back, Livings and Bernardo, if they're better after having an off season together, if they stay healthy. I do think, though, that if Ron Leary understands this offense, there's a chance that he could break into that starting lineup.
Final question for Mickey Spagnuolo from DallasCowboys.com. And Mickey, bigger picture here. The Cowboys apparently, if the reports are correct, have something like $140 million already committed for their cap next year. They avoided cap problems this year by restructuring a lot of contracts. But eventually, as you well know, the chickens always come home to roost. So when are the chickens going to come home to roost on this Dallas Cowboys salary cap? And when are they going to hit that year when they're just going to have to start cutting guys and maybe take a step back in order to take a couple steps forward?
Well, They probably are already over for next year. They do have a few things that they can do to lessen those cap hits on some of the base salaries. But again, when you do that, you keep pushing money back beyond guys' productive years. Now, it certainly helps that next year they won't be gifting the rest of the league a $5 million penalty as they had to this year, along with the Redskins last year and this year. So getting that $5 million back certainly helps. The key to this whole thing is they need this draft class to step up and be productive. The easiest way to manage your salary cap is to make sure you're playing young guys who aren't making exorbitant amount of monies. And with the new salary cap or the rookie salary structure, the cheapest way to get better is to hit on your draft, because the rookies aren't making as much money as they used to. So they need to be able to integrate a bunch of young guys into this team this year and be productive for the coming years and not have to keep buying free agents to plug holes. That'll be the quickest way to get them out of the mess that they sort of got themselves in.
Mickey, appreciate the time. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again before the season starts for a little preview, okay? And, of course, Giants-Cowboys Week 1. You don't waste any time with these games, huh? Jeez.
No, absolutely. Get right to it.
Thanks, Mick.
Okay, John, take care.
Have a good one. Mickey Spagnuolo, DallasCowboys.com. He does a fantastic job. We love Mickey. He's always a friend of the program. I come on down there with them. He comes on here with us. We have a lot of fun. I know there's a lot of Cowboys talk, but we'll do the same thing with the Eagles and the Redskins. Get ready to be a feel for where these other teams are, what their questions are in camp. I think you saw with Dallas, it's offensive line, it's the safety position, and trying to work in these young guys and see if the young guys, not only from this year's draft class, but last year's draft class, you mentioned the Matt Johnsons of the world, can step in and provide a, maybe new era is the wrong word, but a transitional year to some younger players down in Dallas. 201-939-4513. Mike in Richmond, yeoman's work waiting that entire interview on hold, and we appreciate that, Mike. What's going on, pal? How are you?
That's a hard act to follow up.
What's going on, Mike? How are you, pal?
Hey, nothing much. Cowboys, we're not too worried about them this year, man. They got Jerry Jones as the GM, so come on.
Hey, just remember this. The Cowboys finished, I believe, with one game behind the Giants last year. If they win the final game of the season, they win the division. And the funny stat I saw the other day, if you go back, I believe it's the Bill Parcells' first year in Dallas back in 2003, the Cowboys actually have a better regular season record since 2003 than the Giants. It just shows you how playing well at the right time and in the playoffs can totally change the perception of organizations for years at a time.
Sure, but, you know, personnel decisions are real important. You know?
No question.
So, I'm more worried about the Redskins and trying to stop Alfred Morris and RG3 than I am Tony Romo and, you know, DeMarco Murray, to be honest.
Well, on Friday, we will have a guy on from Redskins.com, and we will break down Washington to see where RG3 is with
in.
Injury. It'll be fun.
All right, cool. So here's my question, John. I've been
what
thinking about this.
Sure.
I want you, you know, we've been talking a lot about, you know, it's kind of the draft, but let's take a look at the defensive and offensive line. I got two questions for you.
Yeah.
If our offensive line plays well, how effective do you think Reuben Randall and David Wilson will be? And then my second question is I think we know kind of Tuck and JPP, we've talked about those expectations, because we know the Giants' success depends on the defensive line. But who are going to be our defensive tackles? You know, we went from no depth to a lot of depth, and you know, we had Kuhn, we got Austin. So I'm curious, who do you see plugging the defensive tackle position?
All right, multi-layer question. Number one on the running backs, if the offensive line plays well, I think the sky's the limit for this running game. I think David Wilson is probably going to be limited to 15 carries a game or so. I don't think you want to go much more than that, but he can be a 1,000-yard rusher, rushing 15 times a game, 5.5 yards per carry, something like that. I think he could be that type of running back. And then I think the rest of the carries get split between Andre Brown, maybe Ahmad Bradshaw gets re-signed, and I think the running game will get a lot better. That's one. Number two, going to the defensive side of the ball. On JPP, first of all, I think you have to hope he gets back to that relentless play that he had, and that never quit on a play, always give supreme effort that he had the first couple years that maybe you didn't see quite as much second half of last year, where, you know, he got double-teamed a lot and maybe he got discouraged and he didn't have that drive and that fight on every play. So I think that's one part of it. Number two, on the defensive tackle spot, I think it's going to be a rotation, to be honest with you. A guy like Colin Jenkins is a little bit older. I don't think you want to play him 60, 70 plays a game. So maybe you use him a little bit more in passing downs. He's not the biggest guy. He's more of a slasher. So on first and second down, you run out Linval Joseph. You run out Marcus Kuhn a little bit. You run out, of course, Hankins, your new draft pick. If Sean Rogers makes the team, something like that, that's great. Then in the passing situations, you bring Jenkins into play tackle. And Jenkins can play a little bit first and second down, too. I don't want to, you know, pigeonhole him as a pass rusher. But you bring Jenkins in passing situations. Maybe you move Tuck inside. You put Kiwi and JPP, maybe a little Demontre Moore outside. And I think you run it that way. So I think defensive tackle will be a heavy rotational position for the Giants this year. And they've brought in all this excess talent for a reason so that they can use all these guys and get the most the best effectiveness out of all of them together as a unit.
Right, but what about Randall? Because I think he's a real X factor this year for the team. I think his play is going to determine a lot of what happens to Hakeem Nicks, to be honest.
Yeah, Reuben Randall theoretically could be the replacement to Hakeem Nicks. If Nicks proves that he can stay healthy, has another down year, I could see the Giants choosing not to pay him and sticking with Reuben Randall. I could see that happening. So, yeah, I think this is a huge year for Randall. He has to come in and do the same stuff he did in the second half of last season when he started to impress his teammates and the coaches with his work ethic, and his effort on the field too, making plays and being a complete veteran, mature wide receiver. I think that would help a whole heck of a lot. And I'm sure everybody saw the news today on Victor Cruz. Apparently, I don't know if it's the Giant camp or the Cruz camp, but somebody leaked it because both the Post and the Daily News had it, that the two sides are, you know, getting closer on a deal. Nothing is imminent was in one of the papers, but apparently not far apart. I'm not sure how much different than where they were 2 weeks ago. I'm not sure how much either side has moved, but I still expect something will get done before the season starts.
Yeah. I mean, I can't see Cruz leaving the Giants if he signed with Jay-Z. I can't see Cruz even again. And here's my mindset, and I'll let you go.
Yeah.
If Cruz signs with Jay-Z, and the same for Robinson Cano, not to talk Yankees, but Cruz is either going to play in a big market city if he doesn't stay with the Giants, because there's no way Rockefeller Entertainment is going to have Victor Cruz at Cleveland at, you know, Tennessee Titans. I mean, it's bad business.
Yeah, you would
think.
You know,
it'll be L.A., you know, and I just can't see Cruz, if he doesn't sign with the Giants, playing in a small market. You know, somebody that's going to throw him a ton of money to come help their team out, because a lot of the teams that are big names, you know, they're usually the teams that are you know, cap strapped.
I agree. To me, Cruz and Cano, to throw him in the mix too, will both be long-term fixtures in New York. I think both guys stay here long-term.
Yeah. All right, thanks, John.
Have a
great day.
Hey, appreciate it, Mike. Well, I'm actually get through this whole show, and I'm going to thank Mickey Spagnuolo for this. He helped me through it. Didn't get cranky or say anything bad about the Knicks the entire show, which is amazing, because I am so angry. You have no idea how annoyed I am about the New York Knicks. Absolutely furious. They're playing like garbage. And Mike Woodson last night. Whew. Wow. You play small ball the whole year. You shoot threes. You make teams adjust to your style. So you go down 2-1 and you panic. You go big and you can't score. I don't get it. So, didn't have a chance to be chippy this morning because of the guests. And I guess that's a good thing because, whew, I was ready. Didn't fall asleep to like 1:30 last night. I was so annoyed. Ugh. Anyway, thanks for joining us this morning. We continue our scouting report tomorrow. Dave Spitar from the Philadelphia Eagles will join us. And I'm actually looking forward to talking to Dave. I think he'll give us some good insight into what he's seeing from Chip Kelly, how he's going to use that offense. They have like six quarterbacks down there. We could talk to him about that, what they're going to do on the defensive side of the ball with their new defensive coordinator. Just a ton to talk about Chip Kelly. I think it'll be a lot of fun to get some insight from Dave Spadaro. And no one follows the team and is around that team more than him. So the perfect guy to get the insight on what the Eagles are doing down there in Philadelphia. Everybody, thanks for joining us this morning on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Thanks to Mickey Spagnuolo, our guest. Thanks to the listeners and the callers and those of you on Twitter. We'll see you next time right here on Giants.com. See you tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Talk Eagles.